listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and welcome to our show today. We're going to cover a number of different topics today, so I think it'll be a really good show for everybody listening out there on this Monday as we prepare for the birth of Christ coming up. It's amazing. Christmas is only, I forgot, but I know it's less than 10, it's more than 5, it's soon. So next Sunday is Christmas, and I know even coming in today, you could feel that some people have taken the day off, and seems like the highways were a little less crowded, and the streets are a little emptier than they were even a week ago, so it looks like the countdown is on. So as we prepare for Christmas, I think it's important to keep in mind the main thrust of Christmas is not the presents and all the frenetic activity, but in fact preparing for the birth of Jesus. And as we do so, we're going to be talking a little bit about, for those of us who can't afford some of those presents and some of the things that we take for granted, we're going to be talking at the end of the show. We're going to have Christine Dyke Sorrell in to talk a little bit about the impact that this economy is having on Catholic charities and their ability to serve the poor and vulnerable among us. On this program, though, we generally focus on public policy topics and the issues of the day. And we're going to be doing that, and we have a number of different topics, a variety of topics that we'll be talking about. I'll make a comment or two about, there was a column in yesterday's Chicago Sun-Times by a columnist named Neil Steinberg, who wrote about the governor's meeting with the bishops on Friday, and what actually transpired, and maybe address some of the comments that Mr. Steinberg made. And if anybody has comments or questions about that meeting, we'll take those at 312-255-8408. And that number is 312-255-8408. This has been a story that's been in the media lately about some of the comments that Governor Quinn has made about his faith and his conscience and justifying his public policy positions and the bishop's attempt to address those. And Mr. Steinberg went a little bit, I think, too far in some of his comments yesterday. We'll talk about those in a little while. But first, what we want to do is we want to continue a conversation that's been in the media lately. We want to take a little bit of a Catholic spin on this. And we're very fortunate enough to have the director of the Iowa Catholic Conference with us. In a minute or so, I'll introduce Tom Chapman, the director of the Iowa Catholic Conference, who's going to talk a little bit about the presidential election, what's going on out there. And that also is coming up very soon. I think it's January 3rd. Another topic on the show we're going to talk about today is we're very fortunate enough to be able to have scheduled Paul Linton, who is an attorney here in Chicago, and many listeners will recognize that name for his work on pro-life issues. He is very involved with our efforts to wade through the legal process to get the Illinois Parental Notification Act that would be hopefully approved by the Illinois Supreme Court. And we'll be talking to Paul as well sometime throughout the show. So we have a lot of topics today. Parental notification, we'll be talking a little bit with Catholic Charities. But first, what we want to do is continue the conversation that's in the mainstream press, which is about what is going on with our neighbor state in Iowa and the Iowa caucuses. And hopefully with us, we have Tom Chapman. Tom, are you with us? I think Tom is there somewhere.
I'm here.
Tom, good morning. How are you?
Good, Bob. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, good. It's good to hear your voice. And I'm sure you're very busy with probably trying to avoid television. hear about all these ads. Hey, Tom, I guess what we want to do for our listeners here is you're kind of on the ground in Iowa. And you know, maybe you could describe a little bit. I get this question from time to time, and I think it's confusing for people about we have so much time, energy, and effort dedicated to Iowa and what Iowa does in terms of setting the stage for the presidential election and which party will nominate which individual. But what exactly, I know there's a difference between a caucus and a primary. Most of the other states have primaries. Describe a little bit about what happens in Iowa. What happens in a caucus?
Well, actually, a caucus is held in some kind of community organization, so it's usually a school or a community center, or every now and then it's held in a church. And people go to the caucus, and you sign in, and you can switch your party registration that night if you want to do that. But you have to be a member of that political party, and you go to their location. Then there's some discussion and about what you're going to do tonight. And usually the first thing that happens is then you do the presidential preference part of the caucus. So you're sitting there with your neighbors all in one room. It might be 40 people. In some cases, it might be 200 people. And you actually vote for the person who you want for president. Now, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party do it a little differently. The Republicans, you know, you just write the name on a ballot. For the Democrats, you actually go to a different part of the room if you're for a particular candidate.
You would see me gravitating towards the right corner.
Absolutely.
And you would see my wife going to the left corner or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
Yep.
Yeah,
yeah,
so it's very public. Physical, very public sort of affirmation of who you're supporting.
Exactly. And so actually there's politicking that can go on. And in the Democratic Party, if you don't happen to have 15% of the people there, then you have to go to another candidate. So there's a lot of politicking that goes on.
So I might come up to you and say, well, why don't you come over to me here and join the Smith campaign? And when you're going to say, no, I think I'm going to go over and run over and join last time you could say the Clinton campaign or Obama
exactly.
campaign. But the Democrats and Republicans do it differently.
Yep, they do. And because this is internal, party politics. It's not actually, for the final candidate vote. And so every party runs it the way they want to.
And so all the attention this cycle is on the Republican
yep.
side with the Democratic nominee obviously being the incumbent president, and he'll be their nominee. So does anything happen for the Democrats or at all, or is
yes.
it just assumed?
Nope. That part's assumed. I'm sure they'll go through the motions of
okay.
it, but they still do have their party caucus because it's good for their organizing.
Got it. So they'll go out. But the tension is on the Republican side.
Right.
And so, and Tom, the actual caucus is January 3rd, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
So this is the final, week, I would imagine. The ads are running strong. Is that what we're hearing? That's what we're hearing here.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of ads. And this is really the final push because I think people forget about politics a little bit, in that week before January 1st, although I'm sure the candidates won't.
That's right.
Yeah, the ads are running pretty strong, and there's a good number of anti-Gingrich ads running right now that have kind of taken him down a notch, I think. So
really, and that's what we're hearing here as well, is it looks like there's a lot of anti, and it seems like is it coming from all of the candidates? It seems like Ron Paul's name is mentioned a lot about the
yeah.
candidate that's running most of the negative ads.
That's true. It is Ron Paul who's doing that, and really, if you look at what some of the polls are saying, I think that Romney and Paul are really the leaders right now more than Gingrich is. I think if people really want to know who's going to win the caucus, they need to go to the Des Moines Register website on January 1st. The Iowa poll, Ann Seltzer does the Iowa poll.
Okay.
And her secret thing is she's figured out how to figure out who's going to go to the caucus.
Okay.
And that's the trick, because a lot of these polls, they ask who's going to the caucus and who isn't, that sort of thing, but she really seems to have figured out who's actually going to go, and that tells the tale.
So in our world, we always, in the polling community, think that we try to gauge, not only voters,
right.
but likely voters. So
yep.
So in Iowa, I guess you have to take it one step further. You have to take it not only likely voters or voters, but you have to take it people who are actually going to show up on January 3rd.
Yeah, on January 3rd, and who knows what the weather is, but it's... And, some people, they don't find it easy to get out of the house and things like that, but it's people who are actually going to go sit at a meeting for an hour or 2 hours. So it is a trick.
There's a lot of talk. Tom, give us a sense of the impact or lack thereof that this has on the economy in Iowa. I would think that just what you're telling me, I know television ads are not cheap.
Right.
But there's got to be a lot of other positive contributions to the Iowa economy that this whole process brings.
Right. I think it is a net positive, although this time it hasn't been as much as other years, I don't think, because really even in the Republican Party there just hasn't been as much activity in Iowa. There's been a lot of, the debates and things like that, which have carried a lot more than usual.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who really make out are the TV stations. And a lot of the Des Moines hospitality industry, they
sure.
do really
hotels,
well with
the
candidates,
restaurants.
Hotels, restaurants, things like that. And, it is good for the rest of the state because several of the candidates have really, you know, hit the hustings into the small towns and things like that. But it's primarily the media companies, I think, and the hospitality industry in central Iowa. But it's definitely a positive.
That's great. Tom, if you could just stay with us, we're going to take a quick break here. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We're talking with Tom Chapman of the Iowa Catholic Conference. We're talking about some of the issues that are now, we'll be talking about some of the issues that the candidates are talking about in Iowa, and we're getting a very firsthand account of what's going on in the Iowa caucuses. The number is 312-255-8408. We're going to talk about this and many other topics when we come back right after this message.
Each night, thousands of families face homelessness in Chicago. Those families aren't just statistics. They're your neighbors, your friends. They could even be part of your own family.
I had lost my job, so I wasn't working, and I had run out of all my savings, so I ended up losing my apartment. And I went to stay with my sister, but she's got this small little itty-bitty condo, so we were all sleeping on the floor. So I started calling around for the housings and everything, and they told me to call Catholic Charities, and it just happened when I got through. Joanne answered the phone, and she goes, "You know, you got me just at the right time. We're actually doing interviews right now. You want to come in?" And she gave me the whole rundown of everything and how the program works and everything. She goes, "Is this something you can do?" And I looked at her and says, "You're offering me a roof over my head, something more than I've got right now, and I'm willing to do anything to keep that roof over my head."
Catholic Charities of Chicago is there to provide a helping hand to the homeless. Find out how to help us help the most needy. Visit CatholicCharities.net.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298 or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We're talking with Tom Chapman of the Iowa Catholic Conference. We're talking a little bit about the presidential caucus, the Iowa caucus, coming up on January 3rd. That is only, I don't know how many days away, but it's very soon. Tom, before the break, we'll talk a little bit about the impact that this has on the Iowa community and the positive impact, probably mostly on television and radio revenues. But you alluded to the debates. Has this year been a little different than past years? It seems like there's been a lot of debates, so many of them. Has that taken away from the candidates spending more time on the ground in Iowa as compared to years past?
I would say I think it definitely has. I think it's been more of a national campaign this year.
Yeah.
I can tell you for sure there just have not been as many candidate days in Iowa, you know, than there was 4 years ago, which it was a little different then, of course, because there were both parties very competitive. But still, even just within the Republicans, not as many. I think some of the candidates that are really trying to appeal to the social conservatives, you know, the Perry, Bachman, Santorum group has, I would say, proportionately spent a lot more time in Iowa than even the top tier candidates.
That's interesting. And at least if we'll see what the polls are often wrong. But it seems like they have less support, at least nationally, than those others. So maybe there's the adage, the conventional wisdom of it being necessary to spend a lot of time in Iowa may be changing due to the proliferation of debates and attention given. Interesting.
Yeah, I think that's possible. And I think one thing you've seen here is that 4 years ago, the social conservatives really kind of coalesced around Huckabee.
Mike Huckabee, right.
They haven't coalesced around one candidate yet.
Mm-hmm.
If they do, then that candidate will surprise. But if they don't, then they're not.
Yeah. I don't know off the top of my head, but people who follow this closer than I do, it does seem like, though, Iowa, although, you know, it's the first and oftentimes the most widely publicized, very rarely do they pick the ultimate winner. Is that your experience?
Oh, I think that's true. It's
yeah.
happened a couple times. Usually it weeds out people, which is fine. You know, I mean,
right.
At some point people need to get weeded out. And I think Iowa is pretty much a purple state. I mean, it bounces between Democrat and Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the one hand, it kind of pushed Barack Obama forward last time.
That's right.
The other hand, it, you know, McCain finished way down. So it just kind of depends on the year and what happens.
What's your sense? Now, you live in Des Moines.
Yes.
And what's your sense of, if you were going to write the script right now, we won't put you on the spot and say who's going to win, but what does it feel like?
Well, you know, I still think Romney's may win it.
Interesting.
Ron Paul's running very strong, but I think when people really start to think, you know, who do you want to sit in the chair?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got North Korea, you've got
right.
Iran, you've got other things. Who do you really want to sit in the chair? And I'm putting myself in the shoes of a Republican voter.
Mm-hmm.
I think my own guess is there'll be a good number of people who will hold their nose in one sense and caucus for Romney. But it's, you know, Ron Paul is very strong. I mean, he's got a certain core support that's going to turn out. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I think it'll be Romney, Paul, and then somebody else. And I think the somebody else is yet to be determined.
That's interesting. That's kind of our sense here, but it's hard. Boy, I tell you, I wouldn't put much money on that.
No. I mean, because Newt, really, he got hot, and then they raked him down.
Mm-hmm. And that's still,
you know,
going
somebody
on.
Else could get hot at the end. You know, it's just somebody, if the social conservatives, I would say again, really decide, well, we're going to go with one person, you know, because we got to get something going, then that person will probably be the surprise.
Iowa, historically, I think, as you said, it can go either way nationally, but it's been trending Democratic a little bit over the last couple of years. Is that true?
Yeah, although I would say in the last elections, the Republicans retook
right.
the House
in
the state. But
yeah.
it really does bounce back and forth, you know, and it's kind of a district-by-district thing. I mean, what we're finding is the parties are getting more polarized.
Yeah, that's...
And that the Republican Party is getting more conservative.
Yes.
Democratic Party's getting more liberal.
Yeah, I think that everybody's
yeah.
experiencing that to a degree.
Yeah.
And so with the Catholic vote, is it, I would imagine it's all over the place at this
yeah,
point in time.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, a lot of the, like, pro-life Catholic leaders and names that people know in Iowa who are Catholic, a lot of them have tended to, you know, go for Santorum.
Mm-hmm,
you know, I
sure.
think he's made an effort to appeal to that.
Sure.
But yeah, we've got people who are more Democratic Catholics who won't participate really this time in this presidential piece, and then the Catholic Republicans, you know, it's they're certainly not all with one candidate. So,
yeah. Good.
As usual, we're over the place. Yep.
So what happens after January 3rd when everybody picks up their bags and heads off to, I guess it's New Hampshire next? Everything's quiet?
It's quiet.
The party's
then
over?
I have to really get to work because the
right.
state legislature pulls up, you know, and then we get going with that again. But, you know, so much of that gets put on hold because of the caucuses. You know, a lot of the legislators are involved with campaigns and things like that. So we'll be going full speed ahead, but then the presidential stuff will quiet down for a while. So,
and yeah, away we go. I think I don't know the dates off the top of my head, but I think New Hampshire is a significant period of time after Iowa this year. A significant
right.
week or two is my
yeah,
recollection.
Yeah, it's after a week. Yes, it's like 8 days, maybe something like that. So I think it might. So that would tell me it might be like the 11th or something. Yeah.
Right, right. And so it looks as of today that the big three are probably Mitt Romney from Massachusetts, Ron Paul from Texas, and maybe other. Could be Newt, could be whomever. The number's 312-255-8408. Tom, thanks for joining us this morning. Any other observations you think you want to make about the situation out there?
Nope, I think it's going to be wait and see and check out the last poll, and we'll see where that goes. But I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you again, Bob.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's always insightful and always interesting to get your opinions on what's going, because you have a good hand on what's going on out in Iowa, or a good good knowledge of that. And we read these things, but we're really not sure, you know, what we're reading is accurate or inaccurate. So, Tom, thanks so much for taking some time to join us this morning. We're going to take a quick break. This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference. When we come back, we'll have Paul Linton on the line with us. And Paul is the one of the lead attorneys on the Illinois parental notification lawsuit. And we'll learn more about that when we come back. Don't go away, everybody.
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future. Today, the Catholic New World is better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Chicagoland Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization. Visit our website at CatholicNewWorld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777. Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Help unwrap the holiday spirit this season with Catholic Charities' annual Celebration of Giving. Catholic Charities invites you to help children and their families experience the joy and magic of the holiday spirit. Sponsor a family, donate a toy, or volunteer with us during the season. For more details, visit www.catholiccharities.net/celebration or call our hotline at 312-226-0650. That's 312-226-0650.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We're talking about a number of different topics today. We just concluded our conversation with Tom Chapman of the Iowa Catholic Conference, giving us some insights about what's going on out there with the caucus. And now we're going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to come back here to Illinois, and we're going to talk about something that we've talked about on these airwaves before. We're going to talk about what's going on with the Illinois parental notification law, or I should say lack thereof, something that's been talked about before. And with us to help us guide this conversation is Paul Linton. Paul, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Bob.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Paul, just in terms of maybe you could give us an update. I don't, if we started back in 1995, we could probably be on the air for hours and every little turn of the road this law has had. But in a nutshell, the law passed in 95, maybe you should just describe the law and what it does, and maybe just a little bit about what the Supreme Court is trying to decide.
All right. Illinois passed the Parental Notice of Abortion Act in 1995. This was the General Assembly's fifth attempt to enact a parental notice or consent law in Illinois. The law is pretty much a standard parental notice law. It requires a minor to give notice to one of her parents or her legal guardian. There's a couple other persons to whom she could give notice under the law, like a step-parent living in the household or a grandparent. Before she undergoes an abortion, there are exceptions for cases in which she has been the subject of physical or other types of abuse. And in any event, she always has the option to go before a court to seek a waiver of the requirement to notify one of her parents or her guardian. So that's a standard feature, you know, in all parental notice and consent laws. So that's basically what the law requires.
And this was passed in 1995. I think it's important for people to become aware of that if they aren't already. But it's never been in effect.
Correct. The law was enjoined by a federal court back in 1995 because the Illinois Supreme Court had not adopted a rule governing appeals from the denial of a bypass request by the minor. And in Illinois, only our state Supreme Court can adopt such a rule. And they actually refused to issue the rule and did not issue one for over 11 years. So the law was in hibernation, basically, for 11 years. Then in 2006, the court, a differently constituted court, adopted the rule that enabled the law to go into effect. However, that was immediately challenged in federal court. Ultimately, it was the law was upheld in 2009, and then shortly after that, they filed a new lawsuit in state court challenging the same law on state grounds instead of federal grounds, and that's the case that now is in the Illinois Supreme Court.
And the Illinois Supreme Court just recently took this case.
That's correct.
So can you give us some sense of the time horizon we're looking at in terms
Sure.
of when we might hear something?
Sure. The opening briefs in the case are due January 4th. The abortion clinics and doctor who does abortion, they have till early February to file their answer brief, and then the state can file a reply brief a couple weeks after that. It's conceivable that the case could be argued in the Supreme Court as early as March, but I think it's more likely it will be either May or June, and then with a decision to come out sometime late summer or early fall.
So there could be a decision prior to the 2012 election in
November. I would definitely expect a decision before then.
Interesting. And then there are no further appeals if the court rules this to be constitutional. That's it.
That's correct, because these are purely state constitutional issues, and there is no basis to take the case up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Great. And then finally, Paul, I think it's worth noting that, you know, since 95, though, we have states surrounding us that all have different laws with regard to notification of parents, and they're considerably stronger than what Illinois has, I would imagine.
Well, they're strong in one respect because they're all in effect. And it's interesting that between 1995 and the end of last year, more than 60,000 abortions were performed on non-residents in Illinois. And I think it's reasonable to assume that a very significant percentage of those, maybe most of them, were done on minors from other states who came into Illinois to evade the law of their own state. And that's a loophole that needs to be closed in the law. I would also point out during the same period of time, almost 57,000 abortions were done on Illinois residents, minors, and almost 5,000 of them were done on girls who were 14 years of age or younger at the time of the abortion. Not one of them was legally required to notify either of her parents or anyone else entitled to notice under the Act of her decision to obtain an abortion, which I think is outrageous.
60,000 from out of state, 57,000 in state, and
yes.
Of those, 5,000 are 14 or younger.
That's correct.
That's shocking. And that was since 1995.
That's from 1995 through 2010,
current,
yes.
Through 2010. And that that is in large part because the judicial system, at least in Illinois, couldn't get its act together in order to get this law. And also, I think it's naive to point to admit that the other side is well funded in terms of their judicial activism, and they will fight this to the end. The amount of money spent on this is I'm sure mind-boggling since 2006 that they have spent in order to make sure that Illinois does not have a parental notification law. Paul, you know, I know you probably get these questions all the time, but in terms of your experience, is there any sense of where the Supreme Court is or what issues they would be looking at, or is that something that you find out when you argue the case?
Actually, you find out when the case is decided.
The decision comes, right?
No, I mean, obviously the fact that they took the case shows that the court has an interest in it. I would be very surprised if the court struck down the law. I would expect them to uphold the law because there's simply no basis for saying that the Illinois Constitution protects any right to abortion, much less one that is broader in scope than the one recognized by the United States Supreme Court in Roe versus Wade. And I would be very surprised if they decide otherwise. And I think they, you know, took the case because they want to provide some resolution to it. After all, this is the same court that 5 years ago adopted the rule to
Correct, right.
enable the law to go into effect. So I think they have an interest in saying that this law is ultimately put into effect. And These laws in other states, I might point out, have been associated with a very significant decline in out-of-wedlock pregnancy, abortions, and childbirths among minors.
So those states do experience a reduction in out-of-wedlock births amongst. That's interesting. I didn't know that. And hopefully that will be the case here in Illinois, if and or when this law goes into effect. And Paul, if all goes well, and the court decides that this is constitutional according to the Illinois Constitution, when would it go into effect? Would it be immediately, or is there a delay?
Well, a court technically issues something called a mandate. 14 or 21 days after its opinion comes out, and the mandate is basically what puts the decision into effect. Now, whoever loses this case, if the plaintiffs lose this case, they can certainly ask for a rehearing before the court, but that's something that's almost never granted, and I'm not even sure that will be requested here. If we have a strong decision upholding the law, then there's really no point in asking the court to rehear the case. In any event, those requests are denied fairly quickly after they're made. So I would say within a few weeks after the case is decided, the law will go into effect, and I think we'll begin to see a significant drop in abortions among unmarried minors.
Paul, can you stay on the line just for a second? We have a caller who wants to make a comment. Dave, are you on? Dave? I think he's coming.
I'm here, but okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Yes, I want to thank you for putting on the show. It's I find it very interesting when I have a chance to hear it. I'm part of a group called Taproot Republicans that is kind of a local Republican group.
Mm-hmm.
What it strikes me is that now that and I do some writing for blogs. What strikes me is that when the democratic system appears to be a sham to many people, and is really not that different than a lot of countries that have no democratic system to speak of, like Russia. Because with these people who demonstrate in Wall Street, now I'm a pro-life conservative, but I understand that there's like a 1% oligarchy of rich corporate interests and very high-level public people who control and determine what policies are and which candidates run. And this is a prime example of this.
Mm-hmm.
For 18 to 20 years, a law is passed. You could go over the details again and again and again in this court and that guy.
Sure.
But this demonstrates, if this was about a corporate tax break or some tax policy to help corporations or corporate interests, and somehow it was blocked by a judge, Who doesn't believe that in a couple of days, maybe a month or 2 months, everything would be resolved and the corporation would be raking in the money?
Mm-hmm.
And people see this and say, even though the public backs legislators and they pass a law, nothing gets done, and this outrage of 18 years or something like that, and the law still hasn't been implemented, because particularly the GOP, which claims to be pro-life, does absolutely nothing to say this is an outrage and we're not going to tolerate laws being passed and then not implemented.
Mm-hmm. Paul, do you want to comment on
Dave's
comment?
Yes, I'd be happy to.
I have a comment too, but you go first.
I'd be happy to.
Please.
First of all,
Dave, thanks.
I would point out that the Illinois Supreme Court is the only Supreme Court in the country that has ever refused to issue judicial bypass appeal rules. Every other court in the country that was requested by a statute to promulgate such rules to put one of these laws into effect has done so, and they didn't do it at anybody else's request. They did this on their own. They sent out a one-page letter from their administrative office in December of 1995 saying they were not going to issue the new rule, and they were also repealing an old rule that had been struck down under an earlier statute. There was a tremendous outcry at the time. The newspapers, the Chicago Sun-Times, the Tribune, the Attorney General, Jim Ryan, other people, the governor, people were up in arms about this. A few weeks later, the same person, Daniel Pascale, wrote like a five or six page letter purporting to explain why they were not going to issue the rule. And the explanations given in his letter simply do not make any sense, and that's evidenced by the fact that 11 years later, the court adopted the very rule that they decided earlier they were not going to. So it's really odd that the court wouldn't adopt such a rule like this. And there was considerable outrage over it, but there was really nothing anybody could do about it once the court refused to act, because it's their decision.
And Dave, I think you bring up a good point. I mean, corporate interest and that sort of thing, I don't know. I don't follow those issues as closely. But, we should be really grateful to people like Paul, who have dedicated their lives to the legal representing us, the unborn in court. And if you look at, the resources legislatively and judicially to fight laws that protect the unborn, not only in Springfield but in the court systems, I mean, it's not equal. That's a big problem. And we do the best we can with the resources we have. I'm not sure about the Republican Party being pro-life or not. Sometimes I think it would be better to have both parties be a lot more concerned about the unborn. And that's one of the reasons we do the show. And that's one of the reasons we wanted to call attention to what the Illinois Supreme Court is hopefully going to enact relatively soon, which is a parental notification law that is sorely needed, as Paul has outlined in his comments earlier. We're going to take a break. Paul, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Bob.
Very informative. Have a wonderful Christmas, and I'm sure we'll be talking relatively soon. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Neil Steinberg's column in yesterday's Chicago Sun-Times. I'll make a comment or two about that, and then we'll bring in Christine Dyke Sorrell, who's with us from Catholic Charities. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Most interment arrangements at the 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries are made through a pre-need plan. Your thoughtful planning today is economically prudent and contributes to peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Catholic Cemeteries counselors are available at your convenience. For more information, call 708-449-6100. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan. It's coming up on 9:37 a.m. here in Chicago. We've talked to Tom Chapman, who is the director of the Iowa Catholic Conference, about some of the issues going on in the presidential election. And we were lucky enough to be joined by Paul Linton, an attorney in Chicago, who is representing the case, hopefully advocating that the Illinois Supreme Court will see the merits in approving the Illinois parental notification law. I mentioned at the outset of the show, I hope I'm okay to talk about this, just a little bit of a comment or two before we talk to Christine Dyke Sorrell here from Catholic Charities. Neil Steinberg wrote a column in the Sun-Times yesterday, and some of it just probably should be addressed if people haven't seen it. If you want to comment on that, on this column, it's 312-255-8408. And in essence, Mr. Steinberg takes some license with a meeting that was held Friday between Governor Quinn and some of the Illinois bishops about some of the statements the governor has made about justifying his positions based on his faith and his conscience. And that was the purpose of the meeting. It was none other than that. It was a pastoral meeting, as Cardinal George has said, in the public and in the press. And a lot of topics were discussed that we won't go into here. But it's interesting that Mr. Steinberg felt the need to point out and chastise the bishops for commenting on the meeting. And he directly says that it's perfectly fine for the governor to justify his faith using positions that are contrary to the faith itself. And for people who have seen that, they may want to take a look at it. I think it was in yesterday's newspaper. And it should probably draw a response from people who are concerned about the church and the public square and what we do and why we do it. And it hasn't anything to do with the church dictating positions of public policy officials. It's far from it. What we were trying to do is engage the governor in a conversation just to draw attention to the fact that sometimes he's used his faith and conscience to justify his public policy positions that are against the church. And that, we feel, should not happen. So anyway, I just urge people to take a look at Neil Steinberg's column in yesterday's Sun-Times, and we could respond properly to it. The number is 312-255-8408. And when we come back here, we're going to take a very quick break. And then what we'll do is we'll launch into our next topic with Christine Dyke Sorrell, who is with Catholic Charities. She's the director of the Emergency Assistance Program. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the problems people are having, just quite frankly, finding something to eat and shelter for themselves as we approach this Christmas season. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
I'm Cardinal Francis George, and I want to wish Relevant Radio listeners a blessed Christmas season. I thank you for listening to Relevant Radio, and with you I pray for the continued success of this radio ministry in delivering Christ's message of hope into your homes and into your hearts. This Christmas, let us pray for each other, that we may enjoy peace in our day, in our own lives, in our cities and streets, in our homes, in our world, the peace that only Christ can bring. A heartfelt Merry Christmas to you, and may God bless you and your family throughout the new year.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son is in the number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We're moving all over the place. We got a bunch of topics today, and we're very fortunate enough to have Christine Dyke Sorrell in the studio here with us, which always makes this easier for me, because when people are on the phone, you don't know what they're doing or what they're where they are. So it's nice to have somebody right in front of me here to talk a little bit about our next topic. And, you know, I think I started the show by saying when I was coming in this morning that it didn't seem like there were many people out on the roads, at least coming into the city. But I live on the northwest side. But boy, it sure seems like there are a lot of cars going out to the airport at O'Hare. And it even seems downtown here today, it doesn't seem like there's as much hustle and bustle as the normal is. Is that right?
Right.
Christine is the she's the director of Catholic Charities Emergency Assistance Program. And Christine, how long have you been with Catholic Charities? It's been a while, correct?
It's been 43 years.
43 years. I was going to say, I feel like I've known you a while. I have known you 43 years, though. Wow. Well, congratulations on that.
You.
And
Thank
I'm sure
you.
You've seen a lot of changes through time.
Yes,
and hopefully, what's your sense? I mean, in terms of you've been in this job at various levels for 43 years, as a society, I'm sure we struggled 43 years ago feeding those most unfortunate don't have food, and we do today. Are we getting better at it, or are the needs growing, or what's your sense?
I think both.
Both.
I think we're getting better at how we handle people and the services that we provide. I think the need has increased dramatically.
Really?
So.
Really.
In 43 years, I've never seen the caliber of people coming to our agency for services that we see now. And when I say that, I'm talking about newly unemployed, people that have not been accustomed to having to look for resources, people that have not been accustomed to being in need of food or a way to pay bills or how they're going to, you know, get their children some clothes. I tend to call them the new breed of poor.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, we have served people that were already getting some type of assistance and minimum, you know, families that were coming in that they kind of knew how to access the resources. Our clientele now really are not knowledgeable because they've never had to do that. Some of our people have actually been our donors and now have fallen on hard times. We see a lot of people, the newly poor, are now having to double up. They've lost their homes. They lost their cars. They no longer have insurance policies. I mean, I could go on and on and tell you about the things that we see, and it's becoming increasingly worse. The more unemployment falls off, the max out time, the worse the problems get and the more difficult it is for us to try to provide the needed kind of services that our clientele is looking for.
I know he's probably not listening, but one of the things that came up in the meeting with the governor on Friday was our work with the poor, and he was urging us to continue work for the poor. And I think the most ironic thing is, now here I am Monday morning sitting with somebody who works with the poor. I mean, the Catholic Church does a lot to assist the poor. Clearly, we could do more, and we want to do more.
Yes.
So you are involved, and is it primarily, Christine, is it primarily food that you're involved with, or is it emergency shelter, or is it that sort of thing? What sort of assistance do people come to you for?
Let me just back up. We run the gamut.
Okay.
The Emergency Assistance Department is actually an entry point for the Catholic Charities of Chicago. And so people come to us requesting food, shelter, advocacy, referrals, financial assistance. How am I going to pay my gas bill? How do I keep my lights on? How do I get my kids to school? I just got a job. How do I make the first 2 weeks without pay?
Mm-hmm.
All of those things are brought to us. And so what happens is they sit with a worker. The worker ascertains what the immediate needs are. We try to take care of that. And then we move people into other systems within the Catholic Charities or like services outside of the agency. So that's how we're structured. Catholic Charities serves Lake and Cook County.
Right.
And so we have offices in Summit all over the city. And I think it's about five or six of the neighboring suburbs. We have people out in Summit, Worth, South Holland, Des Plaines. We have folks at 721 and at 1120 West 79th Street. We have a partnership with the Merrillac House over on the west side. And so Catholic Charities reaches out. We're just about everywhere trying to help everybody. The problem is that we need help now to help people because the resources are dwindling. The finances has dwindled. And so we're relying really heavily on people to donate to us and to help us just to help somebody else in need.
We're talking with Christine Dyke-Sorrell, who is the director of the Emergency Assistance Program at Catholic Charities in Chicago. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 312-255-8408. Christine, I'm really, we were talking about what to do today on the program. And, you know, I'll put myself personally as categories. I mean, some of us have so much. I mean, some people were talking the other day saying that, I think I am very grateful that I'm at the stage of my life that really for Christmas, nothing that I need can be bought at a store. Presents and that sort of thing are nice, and it's part of that, childhood experience. And that, clearly we want to do that because that's the way we act. But I think what you're saying is that I think it's important for listeners to keep in mind that there are many of us that are, they're beyond the hustle and bustle of the holiday season, and they're looking at where they're going to get, their job has been eliminated.
Right.
And that's real pressure. If people would want to donate or they want to get involved in some way, way, or they want to help however they see that they can do it, what should they do?
There are many ways that people can help us. We are looking for monetary donations.
Sure.
That comes to our central location at 721 North LaSalle. Monsignor Boland is there, and it can be sent to his attention or just to our staff development department, and we can take care of helping us to buy food or help us to buy clothing. There are many people coming to us that just don't have bare necessities. We try to help people with personal hygiene items. We accept donations of food, clothing, personal hygiene items, and of course, always money is good
sure.
to help us out.
And, I know, and you know, I've heard not for profit say this that. The money is the reason is because that way they can allocate. They're professionals and they know how to allocate that money to where it's needed most
right
now. Whereas if you donate, not that donations are not acceptable, they're good too.
Yes.
But then you're just trying to fit that with the person and the recipient.
That's correct.
The money gives you a little bit of flexibility if it's coats
or
if it's food or like you said, personal hygiene items and sort of thing.
When you think about it, we can leverage that money a little bit better than you can.
Exactly.
Because we buy in bulk and we have vendors that we work with that gives us discounts and we don't have to pay taxes. So we can do a little bit better leveraging than an individual can. However, if you choose to buy the coat or the clothes or the food, you know, we're happy about that also.
Mention a little bit too about online donations. Is that I would imagine it's easier for some people. I'm getting to be one of those people now. I look at my check. I don't write checks anymore. It's great. Online is kind of something that
online
people do.
Is great. I'm not that computer savvy, but www.catholiccharities.net, and it's set up that you can donate online. And any way they give, we're appreciative. And quickly, I just want to say that people are hungry and in need beyond the holiday season.
Sure.
So if people would keep that in mind, we're grateful for what you give during the holiday. But I would hope that somewhere, you know, in the back of people's hearts, we could remember that we have people out there in need all day, every day.
Yeah.
Last year in November, we were servicing around 14,000 people per month in the emergency assistance department. This year, this November, our count was 22,000. So you can see there, the increase.
Yeah.
There is a dire need for people that are struggling out here. And Catholic Charities of Chicago is doing everything that they can to be that bridge and to help. But we can't do it without the help of people.
Exactly, exactly. We're going to take a quick break. If you have a question or comment for Christine, the number is 312-255-8408. We'll be right back after this message.
Each night, thousands of families face homelessness in Chicago. Those families aren't just statistics. They're your neighbors, your friends. They could even be part of your own family.
I had lost my job, so I wasn't working, and I had run out of all my savings, so I ended up losing my apartment. And I went to stay with my sister, but she's got this small little itty-bitty condo, so we were all sleeping on the floor. So I started calling around for the housings and everything, and they told me to call Catholic Charities. And it just happened when I got through, Joanne answered the phone, and she goes, "You know, you got me just at the right time. We're actually doing interviews right now. You want to come in?" And she gave me the whole rundown of everything and how the program works and everything. She goes, "Is this something you can do?" And I looked at her and says, "You're offering me a roof over my head, something more than I've got right now. And I'm willing to do anything to keep that roof over my head."
Catholic Charities of Chicago is there to provide a helping hand to the homeless. Find out how to help us help the most needy. Visit CatholicCharities.net.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
During the next half hour, we'll talk to Cardinal George about holiday trees and Christmas trees. We'll take you to a toy parade where Chicago firefighters and paramedics brought hundreds of bicycles to Catholic Charities. And we'll show you why many people think Father Augustus Tolton, the first American diocesan priest of African descent, should be canonized.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You, compelling television about your archdiocese.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan from the Catholic Conference of Illinois. It's coming up on 9:54. We have a couple minutes left with Christine Dyke-Sorrell, who is the director of the Emergency Assistance Program at Catholic Charities. Christine, before we go, I guess we have a quick question from Peter. Maybe we'll take that, and then I want to get to one other thing before we sign up. Peter, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Peter, welcome. You have a question or a comment?
Yes, I was wondering, the Catholic Charities, mm-hmm. do they... The people that they receive the recipients of the money, or do they also evangelize? They get them involved with the Catholic Church to find God and maybe help them keep their feet up and try to find just not handouts, help them, you know, evolve and stop this cycle of government handouts. And, oh. You know, I'm trying to say, I'm not trying to, people do need help, and I agree totally. But Catholic Church is being, trying to get them evangelized. And looking into God, the
Peter, you're kind of breaking up, but I think we got most of your question, and Christine's nodding that she's got some answers, so we'll try to get it. We got about every third word, but I think I got it. Christine, go ahead. Did you hear enough of it?
Okay, I think, Peter, that I understood enough of it to try and respond.
Peter, thanks for your call.
We are a social service agency, and that is what we do. People are in need, that's correct, and we're not evangelizing them. We're not trying to point them, or we're not really equipped to preach the gospel to folks that are coming into us for service, and that's not the mission of my department. Our mission is to take care of that person's physical need as best we can, and so what we're doing we're not trying to make them repeaters for us, but we're trying to stabilize them and get them to be somewhat self-sufficient. And so the way that we're doing that is by showing them alternative ways to help them to sustain themselves. I hope that answers your question.
I think what you're saying, Christine, is that I think what you're trying to do is address the crisis.
That's correct.
And then, I'm going to take some liberty here, but perhaps those works of mercy that you're showing to that individual, as Christ himself did, will hopefully lead people back to either the church or hopefully the Catholic Church, but whatever their faith denomination is.
Right.
And that's our presence in the community.
Right.
But I think that's a question right now about the role of Catholic Charity. Should it be more evangelical? Should it not be? I think is a conversation for future shows. It's actually a good topic, Peter.
Right.
We got about 2 or 3 minutes. Christine, give us a brief. You guys serve a lot of people. Is there somebody out there that we can tell us a story about somebody who's changed
their
life?
Let me quickly tell you about a young lady that came into our office, I think it was last week, and I had the privilege of being the person to serve her. She had a need. She had a $1,000 light bill that she was not able to pay, and she was looking for some assistance. The reason she had such a high bill was that she has a 5-year-old son that I think it's been about 3 months ago had some type of heart disease and had to be put on a heart monitor and had to have quite a bit of medicine just to be able to maintain. She was on a disconnection notice and was in diehard need of some assistance. In the meantime, she had had a problem in her apartment where she'd had water damage and lost all of her beddings clothing for the children and things like that. She came in. Everybody that comes into us for service of that nature has to bring in some type of documentation showing what their situation is and also showing that if we assist them, that they're able to move forward from that point on. She brought in doctor statements substantiating the child's illness, the fact that the child needed the monitor. The monitor was electric, so if it was not plugged up, the baby was in danger. We understood that. And we were able to negotiate with Commonwealth Edison and others to help her to get that bill paid. It's that type of thing that puts you in full swing of just being happy that you are who you are. It also helps me to be very grateful that I am not there but for the grace of God and one paycheck. Any of us could be right where that lady was. The lady had worked. She had exhausted her unemployment. She was struggling trying to get her baby hooked up to some type of assistance, and we've been able to help her, to point her in the right direction. And those are the kinds of things that make this job worthwhile. That's what 43 years helps you to maintain 43 years.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things you said, and I don't think you probably recognize it, but one of the first things you said is, you said, I had the privilege to serve.
Yes.
Privilege to serve somebody. We have to, unfortunately, end the conversation and sign off. This has been, Christine, thanks so much for coming
in.
You were terrific.
Thank you.
Very good, very informative. And our thanks to Tom Chapman from Iowa Catholic Conference, talking about the caucus, and to Paul Linton, as always. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful Merry Christmas, and let's not lose sight of the real reason for the season. And we'll be back on the third Monday in January. Oh, boy, that sounds so far away. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and also have a wonderful New Year celebration as we sign off. Have a good year.